Today on the show, I'm happy to have Jonathan Wethington. He's the CEO of Shuck and Shack Seafood Franchise. So, Jonathan, what's the revenue of the business now?
So we're in the 25 to 30 million range this year.
And you originally founded the first restaurant location in what year?
That's right. So 2007 was when we opened our first company unit.
And then when did you switch to the franchise model?
We were official in 2014, but really didn't take off in franchising until 15.
And now, amongst all the franchisees and locations, how many employees do you have?
So everything combined, we're somewhere between 400 and 500 employees. That's always a little bit funny.
Did you bootstrap this business or raise capital?
We are debt-free, so it's completely bootstrapped.
So how do you grow to this size without raising any money and just bootstrapping it? I want to hear this story.
I think a lot of it is, I think I've said this many times before when being asked similar questions, and you have to be good enough at a number of things. I think that's really a critical component in that, yes, there are certain subject matter experts and things in franchising, but I think you have to be willing to take risk. That's obviously a huge factor when you're looking at the franchise model as a whole or being an entrepreneur. You have to have a high risk tolerance, but you also have to be a generalist. And so you have to be able to change directions. You have to be very agile in your thought and in your action. And as far as bootstrapping is concerned, the guys that started the company, I'm not a founder, in 2007, just wanted to open a cool spot. And then fast forward many years, it took off. They didn't know what they didn't know, but they knew what they knew, meaning they knew how to treat people well. And when that happens and you treat your customers, all of a sudden revenue starts to come in, your top line grows and your bottom line gets better. And so you focus on the things that you're really good at, double down on those things. And then when you're able to hire others, fill in your weaknesses. So that's the long short of it. Certainly there's a P&L element to it. There's looking at run tables and cash flow and all of those things. But really, I think doubling down on what you're great at, having high risk tolerance and being a generalist.
When did you actually come into the organization and how did that occur?
Sure. So I was around in 2007 when it founded. I knew the guys that founded it. I was working for one of the co-founders and business two doors down that he ran. I was actually paying for grad school at the time. And I saw them building the location. And then the next year, I saw the first summer it was open. And I saw how wildly successful it was. I was actually a customer. And so I just really fell in love with the brand at that point. And then I went off to grad school and did big boy things, so to speak, wore the suit for a little while and decided that wasn't for me. And I was in between jobs in 2012, and they needed some help building the second location, the second company unit in Wilmington, North Carolina. And so I'm pretty decent carpenter in construction. And so they called me down and we built that one. And I went off to work for another Fortune 500 company. And then they called me in early 2014. I came down and visited for a weekend and they said, "Hey, we're thinking about doing this thing called franchising. We don't know where you fit. We don't know how you fit. We don't actually know how much we can pay you, but is this something that you're interested in helping us do?" And I said, "Absolutely." And so I officially joined them in July of 2014. So almost 10 years.
So in building the franchise model, what were the struggles and things you had to overcome to really get it going?
Yeah, capital. Capital was always huge. You look at, if you follow any so-called expert in the franchising community or someone that's giving advice on how to build a franchise system, we didn't do it that way. So we didn't have $250,000 cash in the bank when we started the franchise system. We bootstrapped it little by little. We tried to make smart, clear, and specific decisions when they need to be made. There's a lot of self-sacrifice on that part, both from the co-founders and myself. I didn't move initially. I slept on one of the co-founders' couch for a year. And I think some of the biggest challenges in franchising, and whether you're a zero unit and looking to launch your first company store and then eventually move into franchising, or whether you've got a successful footprint local to you, maybe 1, 2, 3, 5 units, something like that, and think, "Hey, this has worked really well. I can see the profitable, it has great profit margins. I can, in a franchise system, afford to subtract 8% and it'd still be a really good business model for other people to pursue." If you're saying yes to those things, you've got to be really careful with who you bring into the fold. Be very intentional with the franchisees that you're bringing into your system, because you have to impart your knowledge, your passion, your desire to grow the business onto those people. And sometimes it simply doesn't work. Some people don't have the personal fortitude. Some people don't have the risk tolerance. Some people are just more inclined to pursue a 9-to-5, something that's a little bit easier. This is extremely hard. And so I think those are some of the biggest challenges. People underestimate, they say, oh, I've got a great business model. I should franchise it. And my answer to them is always, are you ready to work for 3 years without stopping? No weekends off? Is that something that you're prepared for? If you are, then absolutely, it's something you should absolutely pursue. But if you think that you're going to start cashing checks and everything's going to be hunky-dory and sing kumbaya around the campfire, you're in for some bad news, man. So I think setting expectations and being realistic also moving forward and things is tremendous.
How many franchise locations are there now?
We have 16 locations open. We have several more under construction or in real estate phase and working on some new deals right now.
So with the locations, how do you keep the quality consistent, both with the service and with the food?
Yeah, that's the name of the game. There are annual conferences over this, and without fail, that's one of the hardest things to do. I think the food part is a little bit easier. Actually, you wouldn't think so, but the food part is a little bit easier. We have a national contract with a broadliner, U.S. Foods, and then we fill in our other seafood vendors and other vendors with smaller, either regional or local vendors that can fill in our seafood and other product supplies. That's not all that challenging. We work with a national supply chain management company, and so we buy with thousands of other restaurants, so similar SKUs on some things. And so we can keep costs down. We can do product control. We can inter shuttle between DCs and all of those things. So getting the product is actually not as challenging as the service part. The service part is the most challenging part. If you are in the customer service industry like we are, whether you're in retail, restaurant, or whatever it may be, I think looking at the service of things, you're really trying to convince people to be themselves. That's a real tenet of our brand, and make sure that you're reading the table. We're in the restaurant industry. We're in the hospitality full service. You don't walk up to a kiosk in our locations. You don't walk up to a counter and have a 40-second interaction with someone. Our typical customer spends about 50 to 55 minutes in our restaurant. And so it's important to capitalize on that time. And so the service part, we're actually detraining a lot of the time. We have a lot of seasoned bartenders and seasoned servers, and they come into our system from much larger systems where they may have had a 10-point checklist or 5 points of contact, or you must do it this way, or these are the bullet points you must follow. Did you ask this question? Did you talk about the specials? Did you do these and things and all of this stuff that really doesn't matter? And we actually bring them into our system and say, you don't really need to do any of that stuff. What we actually want you to do is be yourself, read the table, and make decisions based upon that. You're allowed to be yourself. And so the service portion is harder. It's much, much harder, especially within our system, because we are dressing down who is an overly complicated process in a majority of the full service restaurant industry.
It's really the reliance on the people, right? Trusting that they will have those values.
Yeah, no question. The product that you're offering can be mediocre at best, but if you offer it in a manner that's pleasing and consistent and in a way that makes people feel welcomed, they're going to come back. That's what matters. People are all that matters, quite frankly. Excuse my language. You could sell shit sandwiches. And if you do it with a smile on your face and you do it in an authentic manner, people will come back.
Where is it located currently? Is it across the U.S. or is there a few states?
Yep. We're primarily in the Southeast U.S. We're in North and South Carolina, Maryland, Florida, Georgia, and then we have one unit in Illinois and the Chicago one.
If any of our listeners wanted to get in touch about possibly opening a location or about just trying out the food, how could they do?
Sure. The best way is go to theshuckandshack.com.
Perfect. Well, thank you, Jonathan, for coming on the show and everybody for listening to another episode of Failing to Success. I'm your host, Chad Galecki. If you like the show, make sure to subscribe.